Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. And I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. And have I got a guest for you today? He is born in Tasmania, spent 15 years in the RAAF as an aeronautical engineer. Gosh, that's a mouthful. He travelled the world and fell in love with New Zealand and moved there after meeting his wife, who is from Christchurch and has been there for 35 years this year. Lucky guy. It's pretty amazing. He'd been a lecturer at Aeronautics Engineering, and in the last couple of years of service, he went back to university and attained a teaching degree and was recommended to become a psychologist due to his way of dealing with people. He was recommended by his tutor to retrain, and then pretty much from there, he did not look back. So he looked at clinical but decided on forensics, and seemed to be the most exciting and interesting for him, and that's where he did his master's and then doctorate, and then was really recommended to work in justice. So Dale has done so much stuff. And since retirement, he's gone and written some books, written papers on mind, body, soul and health. Life challenges and experiences are the best way of learning. This is one of his philosophies. And welcome, Dale.
Oh, good evening. Or oh, I should say morning, I think, isn't it, when the podcast's on? To me, life, you learn a lot during your life and it's a big experience. And I think if you learn and take in what you learn through life, then it gives you a good grounding.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely agree with you. Absolutely agree with you. I'm fascinated by this background that you've got. You've been on such an amazing life journey, and I feel like there's so much that you could share. We're not going to be able to squeeze it all into a half an hour conversation. So, but what inspired you to move from teaching and working with children and young adults into forensic psychology?
I was given the tool when I did my doctorate and I graduated. Your postgraduate part of it was that you had a choice between clinical or forensics, or you could go into straight psychology sort of consulting sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we spent, I think it was 2 to 3 weeks altogether in each one. And forensics to me had the widest range of what you could look at. Clinical was basically clinical. It didn't really give you a lot of variety. And whereas forensics, it was different all the time because you meet different people, you meet different situations. And forensic psychology, I dealt mainly with young people, youth, teenagers, up to young adults, even up to people in prison. And such a wide range of people that I managed to talk to. And having that teaching background was really good. I was able to talk to these people on their level, which was very important, I felt, because of the attitude towards the fundamentals in psychology. And when I finished my degree, I had 3-week orientation on the forensic side of it, and I was very lucky to go to Virginia to the behavioural unit. If you've ever seen Criminal Minds, the TV show, that's the unit I went for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And sat in 3 weeks to watch how it all worked and what forensic psychology was all about. I wish I could have got a job there. It fascinated me.
I can imagine. So, I can imagine. And do you think all of these experiences changed your approach to education? Like if you actually went back to teach today, would it be different than the way that you were before you had these experiences?
Oh, definitely. Like I went back to university. I was what was I? I was 50, I think, when I went back to uni. I'm not that
Wow.
old.
That's pretty good.
I was the oldest in my class, and like to graduate and then be told that I had the attitude to work as a psychologist. And of course, everybody thinks, oh, psychologist, psychiatrist, you know, a shrink. Oh, no. But I've never regretted one moment of it. It was a stepping stone to a career that I thoroughly enjoyed. I never went into private practice because I was recommended straight away to go into the justice system. And from there on, like I dealt with all kinds. And that's the best part, was just the experiences. I learned a lot from the people I worked with. And I'm hoping I had a lot of success stories. Some didn't work out that well. But yes, teaching got teach the teaching course and my teaching degree gave me a huge grounding as a background, basically, of how to treat people and how to talk to people.
I can imagine. And so, were there pivotal moments in your career that confirmed your belief in the power of free learning? Because I know I've heard you talk about this before, that everyone should have the freedom of choice, and experiences with free learning.
Oh, definitely. The reason being is that a lot of people that I dealt with, especially youth and teenagers, they some have got learning disabilities, and they don't learn like a normal. I can't. It sounds awful saying a normal person. As a teacher, we went out to schools and we worked in schools for 3 months. And I noticed that there was a class of 39 children, one teacher.
Goodness me.
And she actually had a seating plan. She didn't know all the children's names in her class. So she had a seating plan, and these children had to sit in the same seat every day so that she could learn their names. And the ones that were slow learners, she sat at the back. And it showed me then that there was no integration between slow learners and the others, and that you could see that the slow learners were getting very frustrated and they were acting up, they were causing disruption within the class. And of course, they got penalized for it, which I thought was wrong. And of course, I voiced my opinion, and I was rather told that I was only there as an observer, that I shouldn't be saying anything, whatever. But I just felt sorry for the three or four in this class that were finding it very hard. I believe that they would have benefited greatly from free learning, from being able to a one-on-one situation, and basically giving some kind of instruction and let them go at their own pace, let them do their own thing.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head with that one. Working at your own pace seems to be gaining a lot of traction around the world with the huge move towards homeschooling. And I think the lockdowns that happened in COVID, you know, that has sort of happened pretty much globally, really shifted the way people are choosing to learn, and the rise in distance education and having that freedom and flexibility of working at your own pace is certainly something lots of people are seeking. So I would agree. What do you think traditional education systems, besides that, get wrong to honour the child's natural learning pace?
I think the biggest problem is they set a curriculum, and teachers aren't allowed to express themselves or express a diversity because the curriculum is set. This is what you will teach. This is how you will teach it. This is how the students have got to learn. And to me, that doesn't fit everybody because it's the old adage. One suit doesn't fit everybody, and I agree with you. In the lockdowns, there was a lot of homeschooling, home education, and like even my own daughter and the granddaughter. I was teaching the granddaughter as well as my daughter was teaching her as well, and she learnt more in that that 3 or 4 months we were locked down, and then we had a freedom time, and then we were locked down again. But now my daughter teaches the granddaughter at home. She actually homeschools and most of the time. She still goes to school, but when she comes home, she actually goes off on her own, and she sits and she reads and she learns, and she's actually reading the Anastasia books at the
Oh, I
moment.
love them. Yes. I'm up to book six. I love that series.
And thanks to her grandfather here, I managed to get hold of the books, and I gave her the first one to read, and she thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think she's on to about book three at the moment. But she's learning, and that's how she's learning, is through her own development, her own, how can you say it, kickstart her own knowledge and belief in herself. That was the biggest thing, because she had a lot of trouble. She was bullied, and so was my daughter at school. They were bullied, and I think that caused a lot of problems. And of course, the education system is also set up for bullying, because if there's a person who struggles in a class, you've always got the one or two bullies in the class that'll make fun of them because they're slow.
Yeah, and as you mentioned before, class sizes can be quite difficult as well. I mean, it's very difficult to get around when you've got 20 or 30 children to try and cater for all their needs and their preferences, and even be able to have a chance to sit and talk and work at all different paces. So that can be really challenging as well. And way back when, early in my teaching career, I w did work at a distance ed. Distance education in the outback, in the Australian outback. And there were a lot of families where the children were working on the farm. You know, they were busy, that living life basically. And they would get in really early in the morning and bang out probably about 2 hours and knock over what they needed to get done in that day. And that was it. The rest of the day was theirs to do what they needed to. And it was amazing when you get rid of all of the distractions of you've got to have an assembly over here, and now you have to go and have this meeting, and then when you take all of that out that happens in a school system, and you just focus on the key things, and children are learning life skills that should be taught at home and not necessarily in a school setting. It's amazing how the structure can look very different. And that was literally last century, you know, back in the 90s. So yeah, it's really, really
We've
interesting.
got a problem here at the moment. The government's just changed their attitude. They had these open plan classrooms with 60 to 70 children in a classroom with two to three teachers. We called it, a lot of people, I included, I must admit, called it beanbag learning. They had beanbags to lay on, or carpet pieces with pillows and things like that. And the failure rate was unbelievable. Like, it was only between 30 and 40% of the class was actually passing. And they put it down that the classes were just too big. The teacher was not able to give their time. The curriculum still had to be followed, but the teachers never had the time to deal with each child. The other problem here is too, especially with the Māori, a lot of kids leave school at 14 and 15 because they've got to go out to work to help support the family, because people are really struggling. And it's not only just the Māori, it's even the Pākehā and everybody. I think that worldwide, it's getting to the stage where people are struggling to live, and the young ones have got to go out and work to basically provide for the family, which I think is a shame.
And I know you were talking the other day about an announcement around discussing marking for the children being done by AI. Like, what's that
Yes,
about?
they've passed that.
Have they really?
Now, whenever a child, like, you know how, I'm not sure whether you had it in your, we had multiple choice questions, and the teacher would, when they marked a test or marked an exam, they had like a plate that they would put over the top of the test paper, and there'd be the answers, and they tick whether it was right or wrong. Well, now there's a barcode or a QR code on the exam paper, and it's fed into the system. It's scanned, and the AI actually marks it as to what they've markers or whatever. And apparently the government believe that it's a cost-cutting effort that cuts down on teachers' time. I've spoken to a few teachers since I've been on the international learning team that I know and asked them about it, and they don't like the idea at all because it's impersonal. The student doesn't get the feedback. The AI can't give the student the feedback like a teacher can. And they get their marks given to them online. They don't get it in the classroom. They've got to go online and actually find their marks online, which, again, is impersonal.
Well, I can agree with that because I really like to conference and have discussions with children and then get them to have their say on what do they think they did well, what do they think they need to do moving forward, and then they can actually help negotiate what they want to work on at this stage. And you're right, the curriculum these days is actually quite prescriptive, not like it was when I first started teaching. You had the freedom to be able to design incredible units of work based around the interests of the children and also the circumstances of where you are. If you were at a seaside town or out in the outback or in a city, you could find things that had their interest. And that freedom of creativity and planning, which holds that engagement, really seems to have gone by the wayside with the prescriptive. And we're talking about Australia and New Zealand. There's a lot of other countries that have gone that way as well, but not everywhere, but certainly I would agree with that. So with your background, I mean, how can understanding mental health, you know, PTSD and anxiety seems to be going through the roof, with understanding that, how can that help educators better support their students in this type of environment?
Speaking from experience, I suffer from anxiety disorder and PTSD, and have done for nearly 20 odd years. Oh, I'm longer than that. It all stemmed from my RAF career, because in 1971 I was in Vietnam, fresh faced 17 year old. In Vietnam, bringing our boys home at the end of 71, early 72. And it was a scary place. Even though I was only sort of there overnight, we'd fly in the day. During the day, we'd bring supplies in, then we'd load up what had to come back to Darwin for overnight. But it was still a scary place. You knew what was going on. You could hear you could hear bombs and things going off, and it scared the living daylights out of me. And one of my a mate that I went to school with, who actually was there, he was a year and a half older than I am, lost his leg. And we had to bring him back to Darwin. And I flew back in the Hercules with him, and that really affected me greatly. And I still see a psychologist on a three-monthly basis, basically just to talk things out. I still have anxiety attacks. And after the earthquakes as well, that sort of shook things up a little bit here.
Oh, gosh, yeah, the earthquakes in New Zealand, that would have been really scary.
As far as going to with children, with students, you get a student who has trouble learning or understanding something and they're not being spoken to or they're not being listened to, then that anxiety builds up. And they're either going to hit out somehow, or they're just going to fold up and close right up within themselves. They're not actually going to expand. They're not going to, the ability to learn because of the stress, the anxiety, does not help at all. And this is where I find that too big a class, like I'd recommend only 15 to 20 people students in a class with a teacher. Because that way the teacher gets to know them all, and they will get to know the ones that are stressed, that have got anxiety, that have got problems. And stress is the worst one because it can bring on a lot of other problems. And anxiety is a huge stressor. There could be stresses at home. There could be stresses some of them might not like being in a group. They might not like being at school. And that's where I think homeschooling or free learning is a lot easier for people with students with anxiety or stress or anything like that. And PTSD, it's amazing the amount of, I know the amount of students, like the two or three teachers that I see probably on a fortnightly basis. It's amazing the amount of students that have got PTSD just through anxiety and the stress. It's scary. You know, 15 and 16 year olds are suffering from it. You go back 20 years ago, it wasn't really known. It wasn't talked about. But now you've got 15, 16, 17 year old kids that are suffering from this terrible disorder that it affects them. And
Definitely a huge shift, I agree. And that's why I'm interested in hearing your ideas and tools and things, because I'm sure that there'll be people listening who are aware or would know a child or even an adult that is in this situation, and how can they go towards self-directed learning? I mean, you've talked about them having a voice and being listened to and building that relationship. That's really important. Are there any other tools that you would recommend?
I during my teaching or my both my teaching and when I was doing my psychology course, I studied a lot. I put it in one of my papers that I put up on the international learning was people like Pierre Janet and Piaget that studied children and their consciousness and how they lived through their lifetime and how that developed. To be able to mentally, the biggest thing is being able to talk to a child that has got a problem and is stressed and anxiety. You don't talk down to them. That's the biggest problem I've found is you've got to be on their level. You've got to talk to them in a language that they understand. Talk to them how they want to be talked to. And the easiest way to do it is ask them, what do you want to talk about? What is it you want to know? How can I help you understand? Basically, put the ball back in their court and listen to them. The biggest thing I found, or I did find in my when I was working, was you had to listen and take in what they were telling you, because when they were taking that in, not only did you get an understanding of what they were talking about from their mental attitude, their disposition, but also what their interests were. Nine times out of 10, they will tell you what they were interested in, how they wanted to learn, or what they wanted to learn about. It may not have been physics, it may not have been chemistry, it might not have been woodwork or metalwork. It might have been something as simple as, well, I want to learn this because I want to be able to do this when I grow up, or I want to do this because I need this because I need to help dad or mum or whatever around the house. Like you get a girl who says, oh, I need to learn this because I want to help mum cook. Or you get a boy who says, I want to learn this because I want to go and help dad with mechanics. The bit I found that was the biggest thing was that you had to listen. And I think that's a problem today because of the way the curriculums are set. The mental, the teachers have got a mental attitude that they have got to follow this curriculum. They haven't got the time to listen to each and every student of what each and every student wants. And of course, they can't give every student that. Whereas free schooling or homeschooling, then the parent or whoever's doing the teaching has the ability to be able to ask the student how and what they want. And I think listening is the biggest thing.
I agree. It's a tough job being a teacher today. The conditions and the pressure and the expectations and the it's huge. It's really huge. I don't know how that's going to navigate in the current system. It seems to be everywhere I look. Lots of people that I discuss, I talk to people all over the world, and it feels like it's crumbling in so many different places, and it's at the stage where something's got to give and something's got to shift. And I like what you're talking about, and this sort of links back to the Anastasia books, which we talked about. So Ringing Cedars of Russia are the series, and Anastasia is the first book in that series. And She also talks about, forest schools, kin schools, and children having peer learning where they learn from each other regardless of age. They don't have to be in a year level with children all at the same age. The older ones can teach the younger ones and vice versa, and giving them a choice and asking questions. But I think you've hit the nail on the head with the children who see a purpose of why am I learning this? How is it relevant in my life? And then that actually gives them the inspiration to want to go and learn the skills that they need. I really like what you're describing. If if you could redesign education from the ground up, is that the sort of model that what it would look like to you?
Definitely. I would be goal orientated. I would ask the child to give me their goals, what to basically give me a list of what they want out of life, what they want, like set a 3 month goal, a 6 month goal, a 12 month goal, and then what reward they want. If they attain that goal, what reward would they want for attaining that goal? And they can plan, like you could plan a 5 year plan for a child going through say high school, in the 4 or 5 years of high school, and plan out their goals of what they want to do, how they can achieve it. But there's got to be a reward at the end of it. Whereas today, in the school today, there's no reward. If a child gets an A in a test, he gets an A. But what does he get as a reward for doing that? He gets nothing. He just gets the recognition of getting an A. And I think that if you were going designing a system today, it needs to be being able to attain and achieve their own personal goals and a reward that they want, a reward that they set. Not what you set, not what anybody else sets, what they set. Because to me, that would be the reward in itself, is that they achieved the goal, they rewarded themselves. Whether it's only buying a chocolate bar or anything, it's a reward, and they've achieved it. And I would base, if I had to start at the bottom and the ground and groundwork up, that would be it. Would be a goal setting achievement to make sure that the child learnt what they want to learn, how they want to learn, and there's something at the end of the rainbow. Like the old donkey chasing the carrot, the donkey is going to keep walking as long as the carrot's dangling in front of them.
Well, there's a lot of people that would disagree with that statement because they would say they should be able to learn for intrinsic value, and not necessarily working for something extrinsic. But in my experience, and I've been at this for well over 30 years, there's a lot of children that don't need a reward, and then there are others that are seeking some sort of validation, and it might not be a physical thing. It could be a pat on the back or a smile or a certificate. Or a phone call home to the parents to say, "Wow, what a great job." It's every child seems to have their own love language of what they how they would like to express it. So that's really I really feel you're onto something. And I know we've only got a few
I
minutes left.
agree. I agree. Yeah, I agree. It doesn't have to be a physical reward. As you say, it can be just a phone call to their mum and dad, or a pat on the back, or whatever. No
And
problem.
I know we're going to run out of time, and I just really want to keep talking to you because it's that I like how you just hit things back to basics and how you're talking from the heart. I think it's really lovely. Before we wrap it up today, is there one final thing that you'd like to be able to share? So people who are listening, who are going, okay, where can we go? One piece of advice or something that you would like to leave them with, that's something that they can consider right now in their lives right now. In that whatever situation they happen to be in.
Don't be afraid to ask for help would be the one thing. I find that a lot of children, or a lot of young adults, or even adults, find it very hard to ask for help. And I believe if you're struggling with something, or you're not quite there with it, then ask for help, because help will come, whether it be from family, friends, or whatever. That help can be you can achieve something if you ask for help with it. Don't try and bumble through it. If you don't know what you're doing, then you're just losing. You've got to be able to understand what you're doing, and the only way of doing that is to ask for help.
Oh, I love that, Dale. That really resonates with me. I think that's fantastic. And I really love how you're just openly sharing exactly what you're seeing from your perspective. It's a very valuable perspective, and we really appreciate you coming on and talking to us today. So thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks very much, Teresa. Have a good
Yeah.
evening.
Yeah, will do. And for everybody else that's there, thanks for joining us on All Learning Reimagined. We'll be on again next week where we explore Experience Express, but for now, we're encouraging you to go out and live learning. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.